we permit the government or the state to determine who can practice medicine based on what they believe, well, that opens up the door to who can be an accountant and who can be a lawyer and who could be a farmer. The implications for the greater public are very serious in that we now are seeing not only the privatization of religion, but the exclusion of religion in the public square.
An interview today about the conscience rights of doctors in Ontario. As you'll hear, the case has much broader implications than just Ontario and just doctors. On the news portion, ARPA files an application for intervener status in two legal cases involving Trinity Western University. A continuation of our summer series on what local ARPA chapters have been doing to keep busy. And there could be a review coming of the sex education curriculum in Ontario's school system.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Trinity Western University Law School case is going to court. We told you about this last month, but what's new is that ARPA has now applied for intervener status in both pending court cases, one in Nova Scotia, the other in Ontario. Law societies in both of those provinces have decided not to accredit graduates from the proposed new law school at Trinity Western, ostensibly because the school's so-called community covenant requires students and staff to express their sexuality only in the context of heterosexual marriage. The critics, of course, say that's discriminatory, particularly against homosexuals. ARPA lawyer Andre Schutten says there's some important principles at stake here.
If we allow a professional body like a law society, which has a monopoly over allowing people to practice law in a particular province, if we allow a professional organization like that, say, we're going to dictate to you what you can believe and what you can't believe concerning sexuality or anything else for that matter, that's nothing short of a totalitarian approach to issues of sexuality or issues of religion or issues of other things. And ultimately, that might lead to other professional bodies doing the same, and maybe not just about law schools, but maybe about other Christian universities or colleges.
This is the third such intervention for ARPA. Andre appeared before the Supreme Court of Canada earlier this year on the Loyola case. We're still waiting for a judgment on that one. ARPA's also been accepted as an intervener in the so-called Right to Die case that's going to the Supreme Court. Andre says there's a deliberate strategy at play with all of these legal interventions.
Certainly, when I was hired by ARPA Canada, part of the idea was that when ARPA shines the light of God's word to our governments, that that would eventually also include the judiciary, because we have a three-pronged government in Canada. Most democratic nations have this. You have the legislature that makes the laws, you have the executive that carried out the laws, and then you have the judiciary that does all the interpreting of the laws. And a lot of political groups focus exclusively on the legislature, and we try to touch all three branches of government.
The hearings in the Nova Scotia and Ontario cases both go in the first week of September. Decisions expected to be handed down either on the day of each hearing or shortly thereafter as to whether ARPA has status to intervene. ARPA chapters have been busy across the country this summer. In Alberta, the Nearlandia chapter, north of Edmonton, hosted a barbecue for their local MP, Rob Merrifield. Organizer Jacqueline Hamoon.
We've been in touch with Rob Merrifield sometimes twice a year to visit him. We don't always agree with some of the issues that we discuss, but he has done a lot of work for us. Being able to communicate with him on a very open level, we figured why not celebrate the fact that we can work together between citizens and people of the government.
The other reason, the boundaries for the federal riding that covers Nearlandia will be changing with the election next year. And Jacqueline says Merrifield likely won't be their MP for much longer, so it only seemed appropriate to say thank you. As for items that were discussed over burgers, she says it was pretty encouraging.
The discussions that we have are quite interesting. We talked about leadership, the types of leadership that we're seeing. We talked about penalties, punishments regarding crime that's committed against citizens versus crime that's done against the RCMP. We talked about issues regarding religion, the freedom of religion, Charter of Rights, things like that. It was phenomenal, and one of the things that really struck us was the fact that he said, we need more Christian leaders. Because he said, if we stop the Christian leadership, he says, where is the Christianity going to go?
About 50 people attended the event. And one thing more today, a heads up, particularly if you're in Ontario, The provincial government there is set to relaunch an effort started 4 years ago and then abandoned by Dalton McGuinty, the effort to update the province's guidelines and policies on sex education. The Toronto Star published a column on the issue from Martin Reg Cohn in early August. Being the Toronto Star, the column wasn't particularly sympathetic to the concerns of Christian parents when it comes to this. In fact, the tone was downright hostile. We link to it on the cover page for the broadcast anyway if you want to read it. The last time the Ontario government tried to do this, they were thwarted by a concerted effort by Tim Hudak and a coalition of Christian parents who thought the proposed course material went too far, that it was too explicit. At the time, Hudak accused McGuinty of, quote, pushing sex education classes on six-year-olds who are just learning to tie their shoes. Among the questions that'll need to be addressed are whether the new rules will apply equally to public, Catholic, and Christian schools, and exactly what the new curriculum will look like. In a throne speech earlier this month, Premier Kathleen Wynne promised that on this issue and others, she would be governing from what the speech called an activist center. It remains to be seen exactly what that'll look like, but if you're a parent in Ontario, you will want to keep an eye on this file. Back with more after this.
Lighthouse News just went portable. Subscribe to our podcast to automatically get the latest episode on your iPhone or Android device. Visit arpacanada.ca/lighthousenews for details.
And we're back. It's time for the interview portion of the program. On the line with me today is Albertos Palazagopoulos. He's a constitutional lawyer in Ottawa, specializing in, among other things, the notion of freedom of conscience rights as outlined in the Charter. Albertos, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
The reason we're talking with you today is that the College of Physicians and Surgeons in Ontario, that's the regulating body for doctors there, is reviewing their policy guidelines entitled Physicians and the Ontario Human Rights Code. I understand you've written a pretty comprehensive submission to the college on this. We'll get into the specifics of that in a minute. But first, some background. What prompted the college to launch this review?
Well, the policies of the college require it to review and revise all of its existing policies, including this one, every number of years. So the last revision to this policy and the last consultation they held was actually in 2008. So this was a pre-scheduled revision. However, there is some suspicion that a recent incident here in Ottawa has prompted a more extensive review. As some people might recall, there was a couple of stories in the media a few months ago about three physicians here in Ottawa who have a poster or a posting in their waiting room that essentially says that they would not prescribe birth control pills or any contraceptives. And so that created a bit of an uproar. So there is a bit of a close link, or at least a similarity in facts here, and there is suspicion that that course of events is what prompted the college to get a little more intensive in its consultation.
This is, in that sense, kind of an Ontario issue. It's the college there that's doing the review, but does this have broader implications? I mean, I remember a doctor in Edmonton recently in the media for posting a similar kind of sign.
Exactly. It is an Ontario issue in the sense that the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario can only govern and regulate the practice of medicine in Ontario. However, all of these colleges, I would assume, consult each other, and they all sort of mimic each other. And if it's going to happen here, it's going to happen somewhere else. You've pointed very accurately to a recent example at Edmonton. If the college here in Ontario was to set a policy that did not allow physicians to determine what services to provide on the basis of their religious and conscience beliefs, we could safely assume that the same would be reproduced in other provinces across the country.
Fundamentally, this goes to the freedom of conscience clause in the Constitution, of course, but some people will see this as a case of conflicting rights. Is that what this is? What's the fundamental point of the brief that you've submitted to the college?
Well, in its simplest form, my 30-page brief is essentially what you said. This is not a conflict of rights. Physicians do have the right to freedom of religion and conscience. That's protected by the Charter. The Charter only applies to government. And in this case, the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario is a quasi-governmental body, so the Charter would apply to it. On the other hand, you don't have a right to demand specific treatment or specific procedures or specific pharmaceuticals from any physician. So there is no conflict of rights. You know, I referenced an example here in Ottawa a moment ago of physicians who refuse to prescribe contraceptives. Well, that physician who says for sincerely held religious reasons that he would not prescribe or she would not prescribe birth control pills does not in any way violate the rights of a patient or a potential patient. First of all, there's no right to birth control. Second of all, even if there was such a right, that patient could go elsewhere. What happened, however, and what a lot of people seem to be proposing is that doctors and physicians check their conscience and check their religious beliefs at the door. But in reality, the people who are advocating for these positions are the ones who are trying to impose their beliefs on physicians and not the other way around.
Now, this case specifically deals with doctors in the medical profession, but there's broader implications here. Nurses, for example, working in operating rooms where abortions are performed. We've seen some of that in the States. Can you expand a little bit on those kinds of implications?
You're correct. This is strictly a doctor and physician issue. However, the ramifications could go beyond that. Let's assume, for example, the college here would implement a policy that says, doctors, you have to prescribe certain drugs and perform certain procedures regardless of your religious beliefs, essentially check your beliefs and your conscience at the door. If that is implemented by physicians, and if it was upheld and allowed to stand, well, we can be certain that that's going to flow through to, as you said, nurses, other hospital staff, and other people in the healthcare field. Now, of course, the position that we've taken, and when I say we, I mean the Christian Medical and Dental Society of Canada and the Canadian Federation of Catholic Physician Societies, which both retained me to prepare the submissions I did. We, of course, take the position that such a policy by the college or any regulatory body would be unconstitutional in that it would violate the freedom of religion and conscience of the physicians in question. So my prediction is that if such a policy were enacted, it would very quickly be challenged and ultimately be struck down.
So let's move beyond the medical profession. Most people listening to this podcast aren't doctors or nurses. How might the outcome of this case affect other folks, like farmers, fishermen, construction workers, teachers, whatever? I mean, in a sense, everybody should care about the conscience rights of doctors and nurses, but beyond that, what's really at stake here? Is there a reason that folks should be generally concerned?
I would think so. I think it's very easy for most people to say, well, I'm not a doctor, it doesn't apply to me, or something along those lines. However, if we permit the government, and I use that word government very broadly and openly, but if we permit the government or the state to determine who can practice medicine based on what they believe, well, that opens up the door to who can be an accountant and who can be a lawyer and who could be a farmer. And, of course, we have a very direct example with what's happening with Trinity Western Law School. The implications for the greater public are very serious in that we now are seeing not only the privatization of religion, but the exclusion of religion in the public square. And the public square, in these two examples, are the legal profession or the medical profession. But, again, if we open the door there, it'll go into accountants, it'll go into engineers, it'll go into every other field. And essentially what would happen is we will either get to the point where we criminalize religious beliefs and conscience beliefs, or we render them meaningless. If you hold a belief that you can't act on, it's not really a belief.
So just a final question, we're running out of time here. What's the process? I know this isn't really a legal case, this is a submission to the college. Is there some kind of timelines here in terms of when we expect the review to be done and when the decision could come down?
I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you that there have been a number of people who have made submissions. So the college opened up this consultation process to the general public. So you don't need to be in medicine or in the healthcare industry to provide comments. And so I prepared very thorough submissions. I'm not the only one. I know a number of other groups and individuals did as well. But I also understand that there have been hundreds and possibly thousands of people who have written in via email and through a message board giving their thoughts on this as well. So my suspicion is we're not going to know for a number of months how they're going to react and whether or not they are going to amend the existing policy. It's very possible that the policy stays the same. So I don't know the answer in terms of timeline. The process is essentially the college's consultation board will review all of the submissions made. Presumably they will make revisions to the existing policy and then announce it. I suspect if there is problems or constitutional problems with the policy, they will only become an issue and will only be challenged if and when a physician is disciplined pursuant to the policy. So, for example, if a physician who refuses to prescribe contraceptives is disciplined by the college as a result of this policy, that's when I believe this will be challenged in the courts.
Albertos, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great day.
This has been Lighthouse News, shining the light of biblical truth on today's current events. Production Manager, Mark Penninga. Technical Director, Nate Bosher. Questions or feedback, email info@arpacandidate.ca. Be sure to join us again next month for another edition of Lighthouse News.